Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book Study. My name is Sherry, and I am a grateful
We lost you, Sherry.
Yeah, I got muted. Okay, so my name is Sherry, and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Friday, December 17th, and today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at page 154, the first two paragraphs. Today's readers are Christina J., Laura W., and Jordan L. The reference number for Thursday, December 16th, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting is 18,251. And the reference number for this morning's 7 a.m. Eastern Standard meeting is 18,259. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Linda B. to please read the 12 steps.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everyone. I'm Linda B., compulsive overeater from Ontario, Canada. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for a knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And thank you for allowing me to have this opportunity to be of service. And with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Linda, and I will now ask Christina M. to read the 12 traditions.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everyone. My name is Christina M., and I'm a compulsive overeater in Massachusetts. The 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service, and I pass.
Thanks, Christina. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the direction for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book on page 154, the first two paragraphs, starting with bitterly discouraged, and I will now ask Christina J. to begin reading.
Good morning, everyone. Christina J. from the state of Washington, recovered for today by God's amazing grace. Bitterly discouraged, he found himself in a strange place, discredited and almost broke. Still physically weak and sober but a few months, he saw that his predicament was dangerous. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? One dismal afternoon, he paced a hotel lobby, wondering how his bill was to be paid. At one end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of local churches. Down the lobby, a door opened into an attractive bar. He could see the gay crowd inside. In there, he would find companionship and release. Unless he took some drinks, he might not have the courage to scrape an acquaintance and would have a lonely weekend. Oh, so much in here. In 2017, I found myself bitterly discouraged. I had hard feelings, jealousy. The financial venture I was on for all of my life did not come through the way I thought it would. I thought I was going to be set on my feet and to do my career for the rest of my life. No, I found myself bankrupt and in a job I never thought I'd have to go back to. I was in recovery. I wasn't recovered. I thought I was, but I wasn't. Someone shared on the earlier line they were in recovery. They were recovered and still white-knuckling, and that's how I was. Still white-knuckling this thing, not knowing that I needed to surrender to God with action. That's what this paragraph's telling me. Without action, I don't have a chance in hell. I'm going to sit in my isolation, sit in my feelings. I'm going to end up back in the food. You know, and I was in a lot of hotel lobbies in my career. In fact, I've been in over 1,000 hotel lobbies, and I am sick of them. I never want to go back, but that's beside the point. So many hotels, I would sneak out in the morning looking for the breakfast food court, looking to ease that horrible pain and suffering I had in my gut, because my career was not a fun one, believe it or not. But I wanted it. It wasn't fun. So I was really constantly in a state of irritable, restless, and discontent, and I didn't know about turning to God. I was white-knuckling my whole life until July of 2020, when I was pacing my office back and forth, looking at the donuts that were there. And
I was able to walk away from those. But did I sit and think about my self-pity about not being able to use those? No. A voice said, make a call. And I made that call. And I tell this story a lot because it was my turning point. Action is the bridge we walk to God. Action to turn away from the food. We don't do it ourselves. It's God's grace, and it comes when it comes. He could not see. He could see the not. See, I never saw a gay crowd I wanted to run to. I only saw gay, happy, beautiful food. That's the thing that would call me. And it was in nowhere. I knew at that point I couldn't take one more bite. It would take me to hell. So I'm rambling at this point because I don't like to plan what I'm going to say anymore. I ask God to show me. But without action, this is what this guy took. He took action. And back then, he didn't have this book giving him the instructions. You know how lucky we are now? We have this book that tells us to take action. And how many of us don't? I didn't take action forever. I sat in my relapses and sat in my uncomfortableness and my white knuckling, and I didn't take the action. So this is all about action, taking that action, being of service to another person and to your own recovery, because without putting the airplane mask on yourself, you're not going to be able to help another one. So I hope something that I shared helps someone, and I pass.
That was the perfect amount of time. Thanks so much, Christina, for getting us started today. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So now is the time to give me your name for sharing.
Laura W. Kathleen O.
Babylonia A.
Shannon M.
Nancy L.
Cora R.
Okay, I'll tell you who I have so far. That was so wonderful. They all came in so I could hear them. Laura W., Kathleen O., Babylonia A., Shannon M., Nancy L., Cora R., if anyone else wants to add their name. Otherwise, I'll get you on the next round. Okay, why don't we start with this? Go
Sherry
ahead, Laura.
H.
Oh, Sherry H. Okay, got you. Okay, Laura W., go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W. I'm a recovered compulsive eater, anorexic and exercise bulimic in South Jersey. Yeah, bitterly discouraged. I mean, how often in the disease was I bitterly discouraged? Every Monday when I woke up and I said, okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm going to stop starving myself. I'm going to eat healthfully and I'm going to not overexercise and I'm not going to take laxatives and just for today. And by like an hour later, something gave. Like, okay, well, I'm just going to, you know, have this anorexic food and I'll just take one laxative or I'll just do this. You know, I was so discouraged because I couldn't do it by myself. And that was so frustrating because my whole life I was taught that anything that I put my mind to, I could succeed at. You know, I grew up in a home where anything I wanted to do, I was supported. Like, okay, Laura, you can do it. Yeah, we, you know, that's great. You could want to run a marathon? Sure, go run a marathon. You could do it. It just takes practice. And you know what? All I did was practice the disease. And whatever I practice, I'm going to get good at, right? So I practiced the disease, and boy, did I get good at that. But Bill is so... the one thing that it says he was sober just a few months. He saw that he was in a predicament or his predicament was dangerous. That those two words, he saw, that's the pause. That's that sacred pause that I call it when that I learn after I go through these steps and I become recovered. It's that, you know, without that pause, I'm up a creek without a paddle. And, you know, without that pause and that turning to my higher power, to turn to God, yeah, my predicament will be dangerous. And, you know, down the lobby, he said, you know, he sees the attractive bar right there. That's the obsession of the mind starting. That's the progression of the disease that I know that unless I take action at that very moment, I could slip back into the disease. And it doesn't matter if it's 17 years of recovery or 7 seconds of recovery. You know, without action, you know, willingness is just a pleasant emotion. It's just not, it's not going to do anything for me. So I'm grateful today that I have that pause
And I'm grateful today that I don't have to be bitterly discouraged because I have a solution. And the food used to be the solution, and it's no longer the solution. Even though, you know, my recovery has to have a life of its own. It has to be separate from the things that happen in our lives, death and job loss and illness. It has to be separate. And when it's separate, then I'm able to live peacefully no matter what the outside circumstances are. Thank you for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks, Laura. All right, up next is Kathleen O. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning. Thanks for your service this morning. And good morning, everyone on the line. This is Kathleen O, recovered in Northern California. You know, things didn't always go my way, and they still don't. But when they don't, it's real easy for me to go into fear. So I remember when I was new in abstinence, you know, I could get in those dangerous predicaments. And, you know, a predicament is something difficult, unpleasant, or an embarrassing situation. And it's so helpful when in difficult situations to just pick up the phone and call someone. I have to remind myself that it's easier to be entirely abstinent than in the food, because if I'm abstinent, at least my head is quiet and I can make a decision. And when I'm connected to the great reality within, I can ask my higher power what the next step is for me when things get tough. And I remember when I was in the beginning of my abstinence, I was at a party and I had already eaten my lunch, and it was a line of people filling up their plates at this table. And I was I was like in so much fear. It's like, how, I don't want to be embarrassed by the fact that I'm not going to be eating. People are going to, you know, I was thinking everybody was going to notice and think I was some kind of odd duck or something. And I just thought, you know what, I'm going to go out to the car and make a call. And I did. And by the time I got back, everybody was sitting down eating. And I just kind of sat down at a table, and nobody wondered why I wasn't eating. I think they thought I had already finished or something and changed tables. So picking up that phone is so important sometimes. And, you know, this chapter teaches us how to help others. And when we help others, the ability to stay abstinent, to make the right choices, it's much more likely. When I help others, they actually help me more than I think I help them. And, you know, what would have happened if Bill had made the choice to go into that attractive bar and drink? Would this book even have been written? Would we even be on the line right now? I'm not so sure. So when things are challenging, we have a choice. We have a choice to go into that bar and eat, or we have a choice to call someone. And it's not who we call, but that we make the call. So when restless, irritable, discontent, you know, we have choices, the choice to pick up the food or the choice to seek spiritual help and pick up the steps. Sometimes that starts with just making the dang call. And with that, I pass. Thank you. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Thanks, Kathleen. Okay, up next is Babylonia A. Go ahead, Babylonia.
Good morning, everyone. This is my fourth abstinent day, and yesterday, on the second day of my abstinence, I was feeling like a black hole, like chaos inside me emotionally, but I didn't eat over it. Then the third day, it lifted, and I felt so peaceful. And then now today, I have restlessness, irritability, and discontent. And someone mentioned not doing this on our own, and I just keep trying to do it through my own willpower and on my own. Like, I'm not making those phone calls because I think, like, I don't know why, but, like, no amount of advice from someone else can, like, fix this pain I feel inside of me. So I'm trying to lean on God because I feel like only He can understand the level of emotional pain I'm in right now. But at the same time, I kind of have to surrender to the fact that I need to lean on others and also be useful to others. I'm seeing a friend today. We're going running and together, and she just binged 2 nights ago, and she's not in program, and I've told her about Overeaters Anonymous, but she doesn't want to join it, and I don't know. When she told me that she had binged, it made me want to binge because I was so disturbed. I guess I'm not, at, because I know, like, I don't know, I just felt really disturbed because it reminded me of myself. So I'm not at that level of compassion yet. But taking this one day at a time, and I'm going to stay abstinent today with the help of this program, and I'm going to make some calls. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much, Babylonia. Shannon M. is next.
Hi, good morning. Yeah, thanks so much. I'm Shannon M., a recovered compulsive overeater and bulimic in the state of Oregon. You know, these two paragraphs made me think about what was going on in my head right before I relapsed at the beginning of the summer. I had a trip to Europe planned with some friends, and I was obsessed with the idea that I was going to have to eat differently than my friends. And we had booked these first class tickets, and it was supposed to be unlimited food and alcohol or something. I don't know. I don't even remember now, because it, you know, and you know, that's no way to be abstinent, to be like living in a perpetual state of feeling like you're outside looking in. You know, from my perspective, I've spent so much of my life being a person that felt like I was looking in to see the gay crowd inside. And if I could just be invited into that gay crowd, if people could just let me go be a part of it, and I could drink and eat and just be just the, like, really not just part of it, but really the center of attention is really what I wanted. And, you know, this paragraph also made me think about what happens when I have other things, you know, other things in place in my higher power, you know, people, places, things, attention seeking, you know, that character defect, or the desire to win by being included, and how different, you know, it looks today, where, you know, for today, it's not about me being invited into the gay crowd. It's about, you know, what am I doing? What am I giving to places? How can I go be a part of by contributing? And I know this is what this story turns into is he found a way to go give into the world rather than to try and get something and get to belong. And, you know, in my recovery today, it's really important for me to not be someone on the outside looking in to OA, you know, to like be a part of OA, to go join that gay crowd. And then, you know, there are times I get invited to social functions with my friends and stuff, and now I go, but I don't go to be a part of a gay crowd. I go because, you know, there's good purpose for me to be there, and I often, you know, will do what I've been learning how to do, I shouldn't say often, because it's been a pandemic, so it doesn't happen all that often, but I've been learning how to check in with people, because those can be tricky for me because of the obsession I've had with belonging and being a part of the gay crowd, that just makes that my higher power, and today God, you know, belonging with God and being right with my higher power, that is the central focus of my program, and then everything else, that all works out in its own time, its own way. And thanks so much.
Thanks, Shannon. And next up is Nancy L.
Oh, good morning. Thank you for your service. This is Nancy L. in Arizona. He wanted so much to talk with someone, but whom? I do remember the very day that I wanted to talk to somebody. I was sitting in the garage in the car alone, and I just started talking to God. There's a part of the big book that says he couldn't imagine his life one more day with the alcohol or without the alcohol. I had never read that, never even looked at the big book before. But that's what I was thinking about the food as I sat there in the car, looking down at my lap with all kinds of wrappers and bags and empty. And I was just absolutely ready to find a way out because I didn't know what to do. So I just prayed to God, you know, I kind of used to it. usually I'm praying, oh God, not again, take this from me, I had another binge. But this time it was different. He was talking to me. And that is where I found the solution, which led me to OA, which led me to this meeting. And I am so grateful, because now I have the idea that he's always been with me, but it's time that I listen. I got to listen and obey, especially because I wanted to live. I did not want to die. And so I'm very, very grateful for this, especially this paragraph here, especially, you know, the dismal afternoon, him pacing in the lobby. How many times would I pace? Like, I can't eat this. I'm on a diet, pacing back and forth, but the food always won out. And, you know, he made the right decision, as we'll find out tomorrow. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy L. And before we take Cora, I'd like to let anyone know that maybe has joined the meeting late that we are reading today from Chapter 11, page 154, the first two paragraphs. Okay, Cora R., you're up.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes.
Hi, this is Cora. I'm new to the program. I just realized after 38 years of binging, you know, some abstinence, but not much. I've never gone more than maybe 2, maybe 3 weeks of abstinence. I have 11 days. I'm new to vision. And the whole piece in the book where he's talking about looking at the gay crowd in the bar or the church, although I'm spiritual, but I'm not into church. Nature is my church. It's kind of like, for me, it's like I have a choice. Either am I going to choose life and spirit, or am I going to choose death and destruction and self-destruction? I'm pre-diabetic at this point. I'm only about 10 pounds overweight, but I've been messing around with my food too long, too much, and my feet tingle if I have a binge at this point, and I can't be messing around. And so it's like either I can look over, and am I going to go to the gay crowd and binge and destroy myself, or am I going to turn to spirit and experience the magic and miracles? Because when I do that, my life unfolds beautifully, and I think what's at the core underneath all that is really feeling like I deserve to have that sobriety and peace and love and abundance of all kinds. The other thing I want to say, I don't know if it's appropriate or not, is that I don't have I did have some people call me, and I don't have their numbers anymore, unfortunately, and there was a share on Sunday with Rachel, and I was wanting to get her contact information because my story is similar, and I would love to connect with her, possibly see if she's a sponsor. I think Rachel in Colorado, I think. Anyway, this is Cora R. If somebody could point me in a direction to get more connected, that'd be great. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you so much, Cora R. And Sherry is up next.
I'm Sherry Z from Southern California. I am on my 8th step and working towards being in a recovered state. Thank you so much, Sherry, for your service. I can't thank you enough. So I love that we always look at the words, but I also like to look at the blank spots. And it says at one end of the room stood a glass-covered directory of local churches, period. And then new line, down the lobby, a door opened into an attractive bar. That is like the pause, that blank space before I have to read the next sentence is literally what I did for years. I had this choice. And I would sit there and rationalize and justify how I could figure out this thing that I wanted, this food I wanted, and make it still, quote, abstinent. And I would sit there white-knuckling in that moment and say, God, help me, help me, help me, help me, with such a demand. And it was like in that white space, I had this moment where I would just then, like, okay, I justified it, and the tiniest whatever I could manipulate, I would then be heading down the lobby and opening that attractive door. I would just be heading down there. Sherry, please time me, because I forgot to time me. And I would be heading down that attractive door, not even realizing, thinking that I had gone to the glass cover directory. But I had already been heading down the door, and then I was on my way, and with justifications, rationalizations, everything. And it's so interesting to me, because that pause, that white space at the end of the rooms to the glass cover directory of local churches, pause, God. Down the lobby, a door opened into a directive for other option. That is despair and destruction and sadness. And for today, I'm so grateful that I have the tools and I can read the big book so closely that I can see everything happens in that period. When I don't start the rationalization, I don't start the justification, but I truly surrender. So thank you so much. I'm so grateful to be in a vision for you.
Thanks so much, Sherry. And I'm going to, before I take another list, I want to just remind everyone that although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day in order that others might share their experience too. So if you've shared Wednesday or Thursday, we ask that you hold off until Monday. And go ahead. I have room for at least four or five names, it looks like. So please give me your name.
Larry
Chu. Craig K.
Kim O.
Patty C.
Deborah
Greg
G.
K.
Okay, I'm going to tell you who I have, and I'm after Larry G. I'm sorry, what was your name, sir? There was a gentleman that came in. Something K.
Name G.
I have Larry G. I have another guy that I don't have his name. I have Kim O, Patty C, and Deborah G. Was there another man that came, male voice that came in? Maybe I'm hearing things.
Yeah, I think it was Larry K.
Lane G.
Hello?
Hi. Larry K. Okay, let's start with that. So I have five, and then if I have room for you, Elaine, I'll add you, okay? Let's start with Larry G.
This is Larry G. from California. Hello?
Yeah, hi. How you doing?
Yes, thank you for service. God, the vision for you just keeps getting better and better. First of all, as a recovered alcoholic, I never found a bar with a gay crowd in there. As an alcoholic, recovered alcoholic, the only reason why I would go to a bar is if it was a retirement party, or I've never found gay people, a gay crowd in a all-you-can-eat. Right, as a compulsive eater, I have no business going to a all-you-can-eat unless it's a wedding reception. I've been invited. I came from an OA community that what would we do if I was faced with this situation, if I was standing outside a buffet, my sponsor would say, Larry, I want you to write about this. I want you to back it up the last 2 weeks. I want you to write about this. Give me a 10-step, a small novel, and let's break this down. Well, I am not the back it up guy. I am like Bill W. I'm standing in front of a bar with a gay crowd, and I in the moment I don't know what's happened. All of a sudden, I want to eat. My brain says eat. It's like standing on the edge of ice and starting to crack. And someone tells me, "Well, Larry, why don't you write about your child of origin when your dad took you ice fishing, or you had some kind of accident on ice?" And let's break that down. I have to get off that ice. And for me, writing about it in the moment, thank God I have a sponsor who doesn't ask me to do that today. My sponsor says, "Well, you guys take evasive action." So what I do is I will get on my knees and pray, and I'll call somebody. Because when I'm in that situation, writing about it does not work. And I'm talking not only for myself, but hopefully for the new person out there, that this is a reason. I think that one main reason is to go to as many meetings I can, which I go to five meetings a week through Vision, is because on page 24 it tells me that I cannot summon the sufficient consciousness to remember the pain, humiliation of even a day or a week ago. And what that tells me is what the doctor's opinion is true. I have an abnormal brain. I have a brain disorder. I can't remember the pain and humiliation. So being in meetings reminds me, if I am standing outside at all you can eat, and I think it would be a nice idea to go in there and get some salad, right, that I will remember being on a vision for you, that is danger. Call somebody, get in the car, and pray about it. My name's Larry. I hope everybody has a great sober weekend. I'll pass it back to you.
Oh, thanks so much, Larry G. And I'm going to call for a Greg K. I think that's what it was next. Is there a Greg K who would like to share? Star one to unmute. Okay, if he comes back on, we'll let him get in the lineup. So we're going to go right to Kim O. Go ahead, Kim.
Hi, yes, this is Kim O. I am a compulsive eater, recovered. What stood out for me, several people have talked about the description, but where it talks about the choice, you know, at one end there's this glass-covered directory of local churches. It's like, for that side, for me, when I'm on my knees or when I'm focused and I'm surrendered, that I visualize as where my higher power is bringing serenity and peace. The other direction, down this lobby, it talks about seeing a great crowd inside and finding companionship. For me, when there's large groups of people, you know, eating it or with others, that's not, for me, the companionship and the gay crowd it's actually the food. My foods of choice are my companions, because I spend a lot of time when I am in that place of obsessive compulsive eating, that I'm in isolation. So my companionship and my release is, for me, is the food. And if a visual that came to me when I work with my profession, a support group, I'm able to be completely present and listen. But when we have food, and it's often pizza and snacks and sodas, something turns on in my brain, and I'm more, my companion then is more the food that I'm eating, and unable to hear people that I'm supposed to be of service to, as if I would have chosen to go down the other path. So that's just kind of what stood out for me in a very clear visual. I'm kind of a visual as far as like sketching things in art, and that's something, this is very powerful to have that visual to hold on to of what it looks like when the companionship for me and the release is food, and how devastating that choice can be. I'm glad I'm here. I'm glad that there's another way, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Kim. And next up is Patty C.
Excuse me, Greg K. here. Whenever you're ready for me, back on. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. You know what? Go ahead, Greg. Patty didn't come on. We'll take you, Patty, after Greg. Thanks so much, Greg. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good to be here. Just back online after a few months working on another addiction of mine, porn, and noticing that a lot of my eating was to sort of recover the energy I lost spending it on that other. And now, having more energy, I've got like more physical energy. I've got more energy to just sit and be present. And though I haven't been in a lot of meetings lately, I've been doing a lot of work with prayer and meditation and connecting with my higher power. And so somewhat I've been abstinent from food, but it's been a little bit of a white knuckle, I suppose, because I haven't been making calls or working with a sponsor on a daily basis. I am abstinent from my alcoholic foods. And I was thinking from after hearing the reading, I thought of my workplace break room is full of junk food. And, you know, I work in the health industry, in a wellness field, and I watch people go to these foods on a daily basis. And I just want to say thank you, because it's my memory of this group, of the stories I hear, that gives me the strength every day that I'm there to not go to these foods when I'm hungry. I feel no pull. Even on my birthday a month ago, they got me a cake and I didn't touch it because, you know, I don't do that. I don't do sugar. I don't do flour. However, yesterday I needed a breath mint and someone offered me a specific candy. And without thinking, I took it. Thank God nothing crazy happened last night. Today, I feel pretty good. But I'm on this meeting just to check that and make sure it's not some kind of contrived, egoic, controlling thing going on. I want to let that up to God. Say, take whatever that candy, that sugar could have put in my system, take it from me, that I want to be abstinent today. And just grateful to be back. I had other work to do that was keeping my work here from progressing, and now I have two programs that I can work side by side in. And just thanks to everybody, and good to be on the line today.
Perfect timing. Thanks, Greg. Patty C, you're up next. Go ahead. So I want to unmute Patty. Okay, we'll come
Thank
back
you.
To
Patty. This is Patty C from Falmouth, Maine, yeah. And
great.
I'm so grateful for this meeting, and I am just on day 19 of abstinence after 138 days. And one of the things that I was so resistant to that my sponsor was asking me to do was exactly what he was talking about here in this paragraph, which is he wanted so much to talk with someone but whom. And I think about the night that I broke my abstinence. And if I, at that point, I didn't have numbers, all I had was my sponsor. And I think if I had had a number to call, it might have played out differently. And so moving forward, I can see the value in having these numbers and touching base. And I'm continually amazed by how all the dots are starting to connect. So this morning, we just started with the fourth step. And I get on this meeting, and lo and behold, somebody said, without action, I don't have a chance. And we just read together this morning with my sponsor. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, which is stepping into the fourth step. And so I love how the dots are all connecting for me now. And I'm just very grateful to have these other people to talk to that are just validating what I hear from my sponsor, what I hear from this meeting, what I hear from other meetings. And it just reinforces to me that I need to keep doing all of these things in order to not white knuckle. And I loved what somebody said earlier, without action, willingness is just a pleasant emotion, but has no power. So I know where my power needs to come from, so I need to call on him in order to receive that. So thank you for letting me share. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you so much, Patty C., for sharing. And next up, we have Deborah G.
Hi, good morning, my spiritual brothers and sisters. And thank you so much, Sherry, for your service and everyone for their service making this meeting possible. And I was remembering, it says only a few months sober. You know, it still reminds me of how my brain is and how my thinking still is. It doesn't sound like this person's been through the steps yet. So it's like really in a stuck place, you know, still having those thoughts and being able to have a program that there's a choice to go to. And, you know, when I had those few months, knowing that I've just continue on doing what I'm doing in this program rather than going to the food and being with people that are in the food. I couldn't be with people in the food anyways in the beginning. I felt too fragile. And even in long-term abstinence, you know, I was at a Christmas party and looking at all the gaiety and everyone's having fun and eating all these foods. And I shared that with my sponsor and she said, well, you know, can you eat like them? No, I can't. You know, I'm not like them. I mean, I'm like them because I'm spiritually connected. We all have that divine, beautiful light within us all, but I can't eat like them. And they can eat how they eat, and they're in a place where they're at, and allowing them to be where they're at. And I'm just so grateful for being alert, awake, and aware today that I can see that and that I have choices today. And I'm so grateful that I have chosen to be with you all right now on this meeting and hearing. Thank you all for 12-stepping me today. Thank you, thank you. That's all I have.
Thank you so much, Deborah G. And we just have about 30 seconds, so I'm going to leave that for the newcomers. Hopefully, they'll leave their number at the end.
Additionally, from New York, can I have 30 seconds?
No, we're closing up the meeting now, Elaine. Thank you. We will now close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Oh my gosh, I've lost my, I know it's Laura, right? Well, Laura, please read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thank you. Hi again, everyone. It's Laura W. in New Jersey. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.